The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
Professor Luke O'Neill, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Pat. How's it going?
It's going very well. Now, we want to talk about vaccines, and they are in the news for all sorts of reasons. But first of all, a disturbing report from Austria about a batch of AstraZeneca vaccine. Can you tell us more?
Yeah, there was a report of a batch, and there was one death, sadly, on the vaccination protocol. And the second person had clotting. So someone died of a coagulation, and the second person had a what's called a pulmonary embolism. And because two people showed up with this, they've decided to withdraw that batch and just look very closely at it. But as ever, Pat, it could be a one-off. You know, I mean, there was no evidence of any coagulation on the vaccine in any other study, like the trial of 23,000 people, for instance, and nobody showed up with that. But still, it just shows you, Pat, they're still watching very closely as the vaccines are used everywhere just to see if there's anything worrying. But I suspect this is a one-off. Obviously, very bad news for the people involved, but there seems to be maybe a one-off thing.
And are they actually determining causation here? Because you can get ridiculous coincidences, I suppose, that two people who are on a vaccine program come to harm, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the vaccine caused it, nor does it mean the vaccine did not cause it.
Exactly. Yes, it's more than likely just bad luck, you know, because as I say, there was no issue with this particular feature in any other study. The fact that two of them had it makes them wonder if it was something in that batch, you know, because it was a single batch of the vaccine. Two people end up with clotting and they wonder, oh, was there something in the batch? Maybe there was some contaminant got into the batch. And that's very unlikely, by the way, because obviously they're extremely stringent as they make these batches. But again, because it's happened, again, it's being looked at. A bit like during a trial, they've stopped the trial. Like, remember, they were stopping trials a couple of times, the one incidence of something. But just to be on the safe side, they're now isolating that batch and having a good look at it.
Now, you've heard the stories over the last few days about vaccine shortages. And it's not like baking bread. You know, you put more flour and water together and shove them in an oven and you get at the other end a loaf of bread. Vaccine manufacture, I presume, is a very complicated business.
It's extremely complicated, exactly. But a lot of steps involved, a lot of chemicals are needed, you know, to make the batch and everything. And the types of vaccines differ, of course. So it's very, very complicated. I guess what happens is sometimes, say AstraZeneca as an example, their supply chain is compromised for some reason. Many component parts go into these vaccines, you see. And if one of your suppliers lets you down, then you might get held up, for instance. Secondly, the process itself in each vaccine factory, if you will, might be sort of delayed here and there for various issues, you know. So it's not that surprising we're going to see delays. I guess the issue is if the companies overpromise and say we will have X number of vaccines to you, our customer, by such and such a date, and that doesn't happen, then we all read that now, don't we? You know, oh, that's a delay. But again, it's nothing surprising in terms of delays, really.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Sputnik vaccine, there's a lot of talk about it because the EMA is conducting a review of it. And we both saw an interview with Kirill Dmitriev, the CEO of the company that makes Sputnik V. And he sat down with CNN's Becky Anderson to talk about their vaccine and its standing around the world. Now, what he had said was that they approached Operation Warp Speed last July in America, Trump's Operation Warp Speed, and said, look, we've got this vaccine that we reckon works. Are you interested? And after a few days, they got a polite no, and how different things would have been in America if they'd bothered with that cooperation. But I suppose with all the stink around Trump and Russia, there mightn't have been an appetite for that kind of cooperation. Anyway, let's hear a little clip of that interview.
So what about the US under a Biden administration? Because last August, when you reached out to the head of the Warp Speed operation, that was under the former Donald Trump administration. So have you spoken to the new US administration?
Not yet on this issue, but we see very interesting steps that they're doing. For example, the idea of having Merck produce some of the vaccines for Johnson & Johnson. And by the way, Johnson & Johnson is very much very similar technology to Sputnik. Essentially, it's our first shot adenovirus 26. So we see an approach that they're doing to vaccines. And we believe that, by the way, Sputnik shot can be a booster shot for many of the US vaccines, for many of the European vaccines, and that's very important in fighting mutations. So no approaches from us yet, except in Twitter, we put a little comment to Moderna and to Pfizer. We said, open your eyes to Sputnik, and we put a nice song, open your eyes, so maybe they look at our Twitter account and we can start working together at some point.
So, Luke, you are a fan of this vaccine because it's in lots of people's arms and it appears to be working.
Exactly. And as you said, Pat, the first shot of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is almost identical to the Sputnik first shot. There's hardly any difference between them, you see. So in many ways, it's a replica, or maybe Johnson & Johnson is a replica of Sputnik because Sputnik got there first, you know. So, and then the evidence they've published and released, it's an extremely efficacious vaccine. And they would get the credit probably for the first vaccine, kind of, in that they got there pretty quickly. As you said, last July, he was ringing up the Trump administration. So, and it's been approved in over 30 countries already, you see. So they've deemed it to be safe. Now, the EMA have said, wait, because certain countries, remember, in Europe could order that vaccine now. If Hungary's ordered it, for instance, you know, so Ireland could order some Sputnik V, I guess, if we wanted to. It wouldn't be against the rules in Europe to do it. But the EMA have said, no, hang on, wait till we have a good look at all the data, just in case. Yeah. But I'm pretty certain they're going to approve it, you know.
Yeah. And then remember, you don't have to use it. You know, you can order it, and then as soon as you get the nod, because I'm not sure about the storage of this. I presume it's like Johnson & Johnson. It's pretty stable, so you could hang on to it. You get supplies in and hold on to it until the EMA gives it the nod, and then off you go at a gallop.
Yeah. If I was the Irish government, but I'd be aggressively looking for extra vaccine supply, because we keep hearing every day about delays, don't we, and issues around the supply. So why not be a bit punchy and approach Sputnik V and say, look, would you mind if you get, could we have some vaccine? Now, they're making lots of it. I mean, again, they might restrict it to certain countries. They've done deals already with other countries. Argentina, for instance, have a big supply of Sputnik V. Russia itself, by the way, a lot of people to be vaccinated there. So, but it is, I mean, it's another vaccine in the mix. As we know, it's yet another one to use. And it could be used as a booster, remember. And AstraZeneca at the moment are running a trial with their vaccine first, followed by a Sputnik V booster. And they're predicting it might be even better than their combination trial, you see. Yeah. So lots of work is going on into that vaccine as we speak.
Yeah, and a German company has negotiated, I think, with Sputnik V to manufacture the vaccine in Germany.
Someone, after we said that, Pat, somebody sent me a message. They're actually a Russian offshoot. They're actually a Russian company in Germany, I think. They aren't actually German domiciled. But still, they are in Germany, and they're now going to make it, I guess, and make it available to the European Union if the EMA approves it.
Yeah, you'd wonder, given that we have a lot of big pharma in Ireland, and whether there's any capacity there. The way the Americans negotiated, was it with Merck to make the J&J extra supplies of it? You know, so maybe it's not beyond the wit of people in government to try something like that here.
Well, I'd be banging down the doors, Pat, wouldn't you? I mean, this is the most important thing to get right in the coming 2, 3, 4 months. If supply is an issue, any government should be looking to boost supply in whatever way they can. And it isn't against the rules of the European Union to go to a company directly, you see, and try to get extra supply off them. So if I was the Taoiseach, I'd be sending the troops to bang on the door of all the companies now. There's 9 vaccines available. The 2 Chinese ones, by the way, Pat, are also looking great. And again, being used very widely now, you know. So again, you could see us getting some of those potentially into the country as well. And then remember, the goal, Pat, is to vaccinate everybody as quickly as we can. So I'd be seriously looking at other ways of getting more vaccine supply in.
All right. And I saw a story in the Sunday Times yesterday about Inova, and I think they're heading for $1 billion of their lateral flow tests being produced. But they reckon they can get UK out of lockdown with the testing in schools and so on and so forth. And there's no plan here to do something similar.
No, that's right. Exactly, Pat. And the UK, by the way, Pat, this morning, and I was, they're moving towards letting people visit relatives in nursing homes now very soon, you see, because obviously the vaccination campaign has been hugely successful there. If we could get our people, all our people over 70 vaccinated quickly, then you can go back and visit them and get them to come visit you. That's how important it is for everybody, really.
It seems to me politically that Boris Johnson has seized victory from the jaws of defeat, because he's got the vaccination program running, he's got his testing running in schools and so on. So although he was the guy who caused a lot of the nightmare that they've been through in the UK by his cavalier attitude to it at the beginning, he's kind of got his act together.
Well, I think it's leadership, Pat, because if he probably said, like, mission one here is to get the people vaccinated. That's absolute top priority. Do everything in your power, as he would have said to all the people involved, to get that achieved as quickly as we can. And secondly, bring in testing as well. And that was the 90% of his focus, you see. And then all his people were told that. So again, you need a strong message, don't you? It's not a very complicated message, is it, really? In other words, the message is get as much vaccine in as you can and start vaccinating everybody and make that happen. Press go on that, you know. And you need that clear messaging, I think, within every health service in the world, really, to achieve that.
Now, you've been looking at long COVID, and if someone is vaccinated who's suffering from long COVID, what happens?
There's good news here, Pat. It's amazing. Yeah. So anecdotally, vaccinators have noticed that if you have long COVID and then you're vaccinated, your symptoms improve. Now, it's a bit anecdotal, you know, it's observational at the moment. And they're worried slightly that if you had long COVID and you were given the vaccine, you might have a reaction to it, you know, because obviously if you've long COVID, your immune system's maybe slightly overactive. And they looked at this closely and they saw the opposite. And there's a very clear pattern emerging now that vaccination is relieving the symptoms of long COVID. And one of the investigators had said this would be nothing short of a miracle, because long COVID is very difficult to treat, you know, and as we know, it's more and more prominent with COVID-19. And now, of course, they're looking at this closely, really examining this. And then, of course, they get more understanding of what long COVID is. It looks as if you've long COVID, you have antibodies already in your system, probably the low level, and that first dose then somehow boosts a big response. And if one cause of long COVID is remnants of virus that in your body, and there's a chance of that, you see, if the remnants of the virus remain, maybe you get a massive immune response to them and clear them, and now your symptoms start to go away. So it's seen as a really exciting development.
And in the United States, they're studying long COVID. They obviously, it is a problem if you've got a huge cohort of the population who've been infected and end up with long lasting effects.
Yeah, well, in the US, they're going to put $1 billion into research into long COVID, including into this post-vaccine relief. You know, so massive investment in research is happening. They renamed it PASC, P-A-S-C, which stands for Post-Acute Sequelae of SARS-CoV-2, another horrible acronym, but it may get renamed. It's got specific features, you see, this particular situation. They reckon as many as a third of people have it, by the way, at the moment in the US, some more severe than others. And again, a massive investment into trying to study it. And the first hint that it could be treatable with a vaccine, which would be tremendous news for the people suffering from it. They've got a big study on 40,000 adults with long COVID. They're following them. They're measuring things in their urine, their blood, all kinds of, you know, samples are being taken. So again, a massive effort is going on to try to understand this particular condition.
It'll be interesting when all of those people they're following get vaccinated. Will they see, you know, a quantum leap in their improvement? So well, that'll exactly, be interesting too.
And they're comparing each vaccine head to head. They're comparing now Pfizer to Moderna to AstraZeneca on these people, you know, and maybe one of the vaccines worked better than the others. It's a well-controlled thing. So it could emerge that one particular vaccine really gives relief from long COVID, which would be tremendous.
Now, what is a TRM17 cell? And why is it important?
Yes. Well, now you're ready for some real immunology, Pat. You can prepare yourself for this, because this is something that's really close to our hearts, right? And in fact, my colleague Kingston Mills, who you know, we all know Kingston now, don't we? He's famous for working on a type of cell called a Th17 cell. Now, it sounds obscure, but it's central to immunology. These are very inflammatory T cells. They make all the cytokines that we know are involved in this disease. And they found a population called TM17. It's kind of a subtype of Th17 in the lungs of people with severe COVID. And the reason why this is important is because now we could have the really damaging cell that's causing all the inflammation and symptomology, you know, and it's like a subtype of Th17. It's like they're memory-like. The M stands for memory. So it's as if these cells emerge and they stay in the lungs for a long time. And of course, they might be driving long COVID as well, by the way. That's another idea they have here. So again, that's an important discovery, because we can now target them, you see, and study them. And there was a good study, Pat, because they took other respiratory diseases like pneumonia, and they weren't in those people's lungs. You know, they seem to be somewhat specific for SARS-CoV-2. So again, it's another example of ongoing research that's happening into the basis for COVID-19.
Now, the questions are flooding in, as you'd imagine. When will there be a vaccine that includes the newer Brazilian variant? That's a question from one of the News Talk listeners.
Soon, very, very soon. I mean, there's at least four trials running now with that variant. Isn't that amazing? As we speak in places like Brazil, for instance. And again, as we've said before, Pat, it takes about, we're going to say about 3 months really to go from start to finish in a trial. You can get away with less people. They reckon 1,000 people max can be on those trials. And then quick approval, in fact, will happen. So we've no doubt at all that by the time we get to sort of July, August, there will be yet another set of vaccines available to different variants. And I predict, Pat, you might, let's say you're taking the vaccine in September, October for the first time, you may be given three or four variants in that vaccine. You never know, because they're there, you know. So why not vaccinate against several variants, really, is the likely prospect we have ahead of us.
Ken in Dublin asks, what about the WHO's call for a patent-free production of all vaccines to help fight what is a global crisis?
That's a superb suggestion, Pat. I mean, it'd be great. Let's look at Sputnik V for a minute. If there was a global effort, we'd have lots of Sputnik V everywhere else as well. And it's a great vaccine. Clearly, the CEO of that company we heard earlier, he wanted to give it to the Americans, didn't he? You know, probably at a price. But certainly, yes, open access and open exchange of information will be very helpful. And the companies are collaborating, as we've discussed, with different companies making different people's vaccines. So we're seeing a move towards that, which is really good.
Now, when you were talking about a booster to the Johnson & Johnson, this News Talk listener says, I thought Johnson & Johnson was a one shot.
It is, yeah. Now, that was AstraZeneca. So the plan is to use AstraZeneca, one shot of that, and then the second shot would be with Sputnik V, you see. But there is a trial running with Johnson & Johnson, actually, themselves, with their vaccine given twice, you know, just to see if it slightly improves it. Johnson & Johnson was slightly less efficacious. It was still very good, yeah, mind you, 70%, so which is great, by the way. That might get to 95% if they give a booster, you see. So Johnson & Johnson themselves are running a trial. But yeah, still, that single shot works, you know.
If the vaccine is being distributed by the EU according to population, how come we don't have enough while Germany has 1 million spare doses, France has 1.5 million spare doses? That's from Mick in Dublin 7.
That's a good question, but I don't know. I presume.
Well, I think we know the answer to it because we spoke to Thomas Sparrow last week, and we spoke about France and about Germany, and there was a huge reluctance, you see, to take the AstraZeneca.
They were
a bit sniffy about it because of some of the, I suppose, misreporting on it. So people said, no, we'll wait for Moderna or Pfizer, so we're not having it. So they ended up with a stash of AstraZeneca, which people didn't want. Now, I think that has changed. Macron has changed his tune and so on. But basically, they weren't very efficient in getting it into people's arms, Mick, in Dublin 7. That was the problem.
Yeah.
Arlene Foster has suggested that London and Dublin should get their heads together and bring vaccination on both islands in sync. That's from John
Tremendous.
In Limerick. It would be great if you could do it.
Oh, tremendous. I mean, there shouldn't be any politics or messing. The mission here is to get as much vaccine into. I wouldn't be proud in any way, Pat. I'd go wherever there's vaccine available and say yes, because as I say, the mission is to get as much vaccine into people as quickly as we can. And wouldn't it be tremendous if we could get the Irish population at a level of vaccination just like in the UK?
This one here. Can you ask Luke if I'll be getting my vaccine soon as I have multiple myeloma? This is people with serious underlying conditions that are next in line. There is a list of them, and I don't have that list in front
there
of me,
is.
I'm afraid.
Yeah, it could be on the list. Yeah, I wouldn't know exactly. It may well be one on the list. I mean, that's a good move, by the way, Pat. This week, they're beginning to vaccinate people with underlying conditions, because they're as at higher risk as older people, you see, if you're over 80, say, and then you compare to someone with some disease, you could be as higher risk as that. So it's good that those people are now getting vaccinated.
And Martin says, my mother-in-law has been offered the Sinopharm Chinese vaccine in another European country, which is her home country. It hasn't been EMA approved and it's hard to find trial data as to its efficacy. Is it safe to take or should she wait for another vaccine?
No, it is. Yeah, I mean, they published some data on that. Not as much as other vaccines, though. That's the only slight concern, maybe. But certainly it's in lots and lots of people, especially in the Middle East. I've had that one. And again, nothing untoward. So if I was in a country where I was offered that, I'd take it.
Can you ask Luke, which vaccines protect you from which strains of COVID-19? That's from John in Dublin 2.
That's the big question indeed. Yeah, well, the original strain, of course, is the one that we're getting vaccines against, as we know. It's called the parental strain now, by the way. So they all work against that. And then the new variants, they all work a bit against these new variants. Remember, especially the UK one, they seem to be as efficacious against that. The slightly decreased efficacy with some of the other ones, you know. And again, that's why we need specific vaccines for those variants. But the virus in Ireland, the vaccines work against those for definite.
My friend is just back from Poland. On the flight out, she asked how many of the 200 passengers had been tested prior to the flight. The answer was 64. Apparently, if you say you'll quarantine for 2 weeks upon arrival, then you don't have to test prior to the flight. Where is the protection? So you could potentially test negative and sit beside someone who just has it and plans to quarantine. Main question is, while Irish citizens are in lockdown doing everything we can to protect ourselves and to protect others, why is the government not doing everything to protect us? That's from Joan. I mean, that's because the law has only been signed in by the president yesterday. But it's that business. Are you going to quarantine? Oh, yes, I will. Yeah, thank you very much. Off you go.
I know.
That's going to stop.
Ridiculous. Isn't it ridiculous? Yeah. But that's an important point. We've got to tighten up the border, especially as we open everything up, remember. And we go to a situation where the virus is extremely low in Ireland. The risk then comes inward travel, doesn't it? So we've got to be extra zealous then in the coming months with regard to travel for definite. Mm.
Can you ask Luke, how long does he think the vaccine will remain effective? As my brother has had COVID twice in the last 3 months. Also ask him why some of the vaccines are making people sick in the short term. That's from Noel in Thurles.
Yeah, AstraZeneca, actually, that gives a much more robust response, shall we say, for definite. That's known now. If you take that one, you're going to have symptoms the next day, you know, the flu-like symptoms, take a bit of paracetamol, and it goes away. That's a bit stronger than the other vaccines. That's the first thing we know. This could be a good thing, though, because you might get longer protection if you have a stronger response to a vaccine, because your immune system has really been, you know, activated, I guess. But at the moment, it looks as if the vaccine efficacy is persisting across several months, which as time goes by, we get more of a picture of this. And one very optimistic thing I saw last week, but I think that could last for a couple of years, a single vaccine shot, you know, it should be tremendous. But again, it's a work in progress. We still got to keep an eye on the data.
Would it be possible, by the way, Luca, that we'll get a one-shot kills all kind of flu, stroke, COVID vaccine combined?
We may do, yeah. And the second big debate, but is it more like measles or flu? That debate is still running. Now, measles is a single shot for life, remember. That's all you need. Whereas flu, it's every season. This could be in the middle, we think. It will give you a few years protection from a single shot. And then if you're given multiple variants, that might protect you for 1, 2, 3 years down the line, you see, if not beyond. So it's an interesting time. I mean, you can imagine the amount of research going on, but they're monitoring all these people who've been vaccinated very closely now, you know, just to see how strong these vaccines are.
And a final one for the moment from Dave. Can you ask Professor O'Neill why it won't be until April before the Johnson & Johnson vaccine is distributed if the EMA is due to approve it this week? Surely the orders are in, so shipping should start straight away.
Well, precisely. And I remember, Pat, the data on those vaccines get stronger and stronger and stronger. I mean, that's why we got to get the vaccine out as quickly as we can. I mean, last week there was a fantastic analysis in the UK. It is now giving rise to a 90% decrease in fatalities and hospitalizations. That's AstraZeneca, for example, you know. So, of course, the sooner we get people vaccinated with all those vaccines, the better. It wouldn't surprise me they'll push this forward. Because why would they be so hesitant if there's proven safety data now in lots of different places? So it wouldn't surprise me, but they try to get that in more quickly.
All right. Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at Trinity College in Dublin. Thank you very much for joining.